Welcome to the Game Audio Hour, a fortnightly podcast where we discuss all things game audio, from creative ideas to the latest techniques, project experiences to audio secrets. Here is where you'll find in-depth coverage and opinions related to game audio. This is episode 258. I am sufficiently caffeinated. I'm doing very well after drinking my fifth cup of Uncle Lee's black tea. Yeah, I'm very, very caffeinated right now, so hopefully you'll be hearing a somewhat agitated, but not too crazy, Vincent Diamante on this end. Hopefully. I think that's the case there. But of course, I'm not alone. I also have my wonderful cohort over here. Let's start off with the closest, just up the street, so to say, still in the great state of California. We have Mike Shapiro. How are you doing there?
I'm doing great. By the way, I am a big fan of Uncle Lee's white tea. I haven't tried the black variety, but yeah, that stuff is great.
Yeah, Uncle Lee's is pretty good. The black tea is quite good. The green tea is quite good. I'll make a note to pick up some white tea when I'm at the shop next. We know about Uncle Lee's. What about you, Alex? Alex May, do you know about Uncle Lee's tea?
Actually, I don't. I think I might have seen the label before, but I've never tried it. And it is not a brand that you can readily get over here in Sweden. Here, actually, the tea market is pretty much dominated by Lipton because most people in Sweden are coffee drinkers. And so if you're like me, like very much a tea drinker, it's slim pickings. But for me, it's got to be either Yorkshire tea or PG Tips, both of which are sort of reliable staples of the British tea heritage. If you're heavily caffeinated during today's show, I guess I'm heavily chocolinated because we are recording this on the Easter weekend. And of course, when you have children and Easter mixed together to produce only one thing, which is chocolate. And that is the weekend that I'm having. Let us celebrate the show with caffeine, chocolate, and good conversation about game audio, which is why we're here. Am I right?
Well done, and that was a splendid segue.
Yes, thank you. Well rehearsed.
Let's do it. I'm really looking forward to it, even though it's only been about a week or so since both Mike and I were over at Game Developers Conference, really being immersed in the game world and specifically the game audio and music world that converges on San Francisco. I had a pretty fun week. How about you, Mike?
I had a great time, as always. The issue I've had, and I think this has been my issue for 2 or 3 years at this point, is that I get a pass that entitles me to go to all these wonderful talks and presentations, and then I get pulled into meetings, and I miss most of the opportunities to see all the talks and presentations that my pass allows me to see. So This year, at the end of the conference, I found myself wondering, should I bother next year? Should I just get an expo pass, go to the big events, and just let the meetings happen and not get a vault subscription afterwards so that I can enjoy all the talks. So that is an issue I'm contemplating for next year. But I can safely say that the talks I attended were generally excellent and the experience overall was great.
Ah, that's great to hear. I feel you when it comes to that uncertainty about getting passes and knowing that when you're at GDC, you're going to be doing things that are not part of the GDC programming because you need to meet people, you need to go to meetings, things just happen, and you realize, oh, it might behoove me to hang out with these people over here as opposed to going to that lecture that is in your calendar. And
I definitely felt that this year, even though I decided not to get a core pass. Actually, I was there on the audio pass, which is a little cheaper than the core pass that entitles you to the to most of the lectures and summits and all that. But I couldn't get into some of the things that I was really excited about. Some things that were not very audio oriented, stuff like graphics talks and history talks and generalist game design talks. And I was so annoyed when I saw on the schedule that David Westman, who is one of the game designers for LucasArts classic space combat simulation game series, the X-Wing series, you know, X-Wing, TIE Fighter, X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, X-Wing Alliance. Those games were really my childhood there back in the mid-90s. He was giving a talk, and my audio pass would not let me go there. I was so frustrated about that. But on the other hand, even with that more limited pass, I found myself eschewing some of those audio lectures that were on my calendar in order to do some other things with people and parties and things that just came up. And even though I have a little bit of regret for missing some of those things, I'm still thinking, wow, this is probably the best GDC that I've had in a long time, maybe in a decade, when it came to just good conversation and meeting people and good feelings all around. And this was actually really surprising for me, considering going into GDC week was all the horrible news about layoffs and downsizing. And honestly, that stuff is still going on. The industry is still struggling a bit. We're hearing about things like the Embracer Group selling off and, you know, more layoffs. But I think GDC and the people that were there really did a good job of serving as an inspiration for everyone else that happened to be in that area. So this was actually a very good GDC for me. Did you feel something along those lines while you were there that week, Mike?
I did. I found the energy to be unexpectedly positive given all the downturn and the layoffs that had happened in recent memory. I was expecting a somewhat subdued, perhaps more depressing atmosphere. But I found that wasn't the case. It was really kind of an upbeat. If I had to take the mathematical average of the vibe, I would say it was upbeat on average. And it was a good time, emotionally speaking.
Yeah, emotionally speaking, definitely good. I think there is still that financial issue. GDC is an expensive event, and San Francisco is an expensive city. So I always struggle with this. Is it really worth it for me to go to GDC? I remember back when it was in San Jose, it was such an easy proposition for me. Yes, of course it's worth it. Ever since it moved to San Francisco, it's been one of those things where I just have to weigh, here's the pros, here are the cons. Oh, yeah, that's a real issue there when it comes to budget and time. But I think more often than not, GDC ends up hitting strong, and I'm glad that I came this year. Not so glad that I didn't get to see you, Alex. Come on, you should come over here.
Yeah, I know. The price really is, you know, when you live in Europe, it really is quite prohibitive. You know, you spend about as much as you do on the airplane ticket as you do to actually get in, and that's... there's something not quite right about that. Yeah. I mean, of course, I understand GDC is, you know, it is the largest video game development-focused conference in the world. So, of course, it's going to come with a bit of a price tag. That's understandable. But also, compared to many of the medium-sized events that are gaining in popularity at the moment, GDC really, the value... not so sure anymore. Like, if I compare it directly to the ones that in Europe of this type that are of a medium scale, for example, the Develop conference in Brighton in the UK, and also one coming in just 4 weeks from now, which is Reboot Develop Blue in Dubrovnik in Croatia. These are, I suppose you could say, medium-sized game development events, and the price tag for these is much more affordable. And then because of that, you get a really broad cross-section of people from all around the world coming to these events, just because simply because it's much more affordable, and that's fantastic. And GDC being the largest, of course, you get, you know, the hugest diverse range of people, but at the same time, in terms of smaller game companies, I would probably hazard a guess that GDC might be biased more towards smaller American game companies that are locally based, so that it's cheaper and easier to get there from where you are in the United States, compared to smaller companies such as my own having to pay thousands of dollars just to fly there, and then another $1,000 just to get in there. But, you know, what can you say? These are the costs that are involved with these kinds of huge events. So I will say I did not go to GDC, as I pointed out, but 2 weeks before GDC, I did attend, together with my colleague at Moon Mode, Rosie, together we attended a virtual event for the Women in Games Association, and that was absolutely fantastic. It was actually probably the best virtual event that I've ever attended. The system that they were using for it was outstanding. Essentially, you had like a main stage area where you could just click in and watch talks that were going on. And on the side, you had the sidebar that showed you a schedule, and you could obviously add favorites from the schedule and then list only your favorites so you could get a running schedule of your daily plan. But they also had this really fun system where you fill out a bunch of questions in a profile about yourself, and then it puts you into these speed networking rooms. So you press a button, and then you have 5 minutes, basically. It'll algorithmically match you together with somebody else that potentially would be interesting for you to talk to, and it gives you 5 minutes with a little timer there for a video call with this algorithmically selected person. And then at the end, as the 5 minutes counts down, 30 seconds from the end, there'll be a little prompt that appears up in the top that says, do you wish to extend your call by another 5 minutes? And if you click yes, I wish to extend, then the other party also has to accept that they wish to extend. And so it kind of works like that. And this was absolutely fantastic because I met so many wonderful people that I would probably never really have the opportunity to talk to at a real-life event. Normally at real-life events, it kind of depends a bit on how many people you know who are also attending with you, right? To a certain extent, you can just walk up to people and say, hi, I'm Alex, let's chat. You can do that, of course. But most networking, for me at least, tends to happen through people that friends of mine will introduce me to. This algorithmic system meant you sort of circumvent all of that, and you're assigned to people who potentially, algorithmically speaking, you have a matching kind of profile for what you're looking to talk about and what you're looking to gain from a networking encounter. And it was really, really great. So, this was the Women in Games event, and I highly, highly recommend this event to everybody, men and women alike. For women, it was a wonderful, safe environment to network and to learn. For men as well, it's always important for us, I think, to keep on top of the current state of affairs for women in our industry, because let's face it, it's not good. And it's very important, I think, for us to stay aware of how things are for women in game companies, and also women who are aspiring to join game companies, what the real situation is in terms of the, you know, equality and the rights of women in the workplace. So a very, very good event for its objective and also for its setup. So highly recommended.
I love the format you described of the speed networking aspect. I think it sounds like it's a great way to potentially expand the world of your contacts without any sense of pressure, and the constraints that are imposed seem like a virtue in this case.
Yeah, absolutely. It was really good. So for more information on that, it is the Women in Games Association. I don't know their website, but I'm pretty sure if you just search for that, you'll find something. And they have this event annually, and it's a virtual event held via an online platform, whose name escapes me at this moment, but that's probably not very important. Just go and check out the website and sign up for their newsletter, and I'll see you at the next one.
You know, Alex, since you in passing did impugn the value proposition of GDC, I feel like I must rise to the challenge of that challenge and respond by saying, I don't know, in that I don't actually... I've been thinking about this quite a bit, like, you know, the value proposition of GDC, and what is it for people at different career levels, and in particular, audio people at different career levels. And for some people, you might say, well, it's don't bother going, it's too expensive, but sign up for the vault so you can get the advantage of all the talks and presentations. And there's another philosophy that recommends the opposite of that and says, just get yourself an expo pass or just get yourself a ticket to San Francisco and hang out, because the networking aspect is more valuable than the formal presentations. And I think both of these, which represent two extremes of participation, are valid in different contexts. And it's hard for me to recommend one versus the other in a sweeping way, you know, without knowing more about the person to whom I'd be making the recommendation. And I said earlier, I haven't quite settled on an answer to that to myself. So I do think there is value in GDC, but it's complicated, as the expression goes.
Hmm. I think very much it depends, as you said there, on the stage you are at in your career. If you are just starting off, then it can be very useful. I mean, there's a lot of people who congregate there. The opportunities for networking, as you point out, and various parties, and if you know one or two people, you know, getting around by being introduced to people that they know, etc., that's all very useful. If you're in the audio field, there's always a lot of really fun stuff happening with the game audio community at GDC, and that's always wonderful just to hang around and be a part of, and it's always fun and informative and educational to network and mix with other game audio people. And if you're later on in your career, then maybe, you know, I suppose it depends if you're looking for a publisher or if you are, it depends on exactly what you were doing, I suppose. But if you're able to get there and it's and you can afford the cost of an expo pass or not, and you're just able to get there fairly affordably, then I would say, why not? Let's go. If you're not able to get there like me, then I would say, nah, maybe don't bother. What do you think, Vince?
Yeah, it's complicated. It really is complicated. I know in the past, just thinking about how I've done GDC, you know, so many times I've found ways to deal with those costs. You know, things like, oh, I have a friend in Oakland, and I'm going to use the BART to go into town every day, and or. You know, just simply being in California and being able to drive up there is such a nice thing compared to, you know, being even elsewhere in the U.S. where that's just not feasible. The cost is significant, and it really does depend on where you are in your career. This time around at GDC, I definitely was thinking about that as I was exposed to a huge swath of other audio professionals, as well as audio professionals to be, by virtue of them still being in school or, you know, in their last year trying to figure out about what's going to be there for them in the coming year. So I think one of the things that I realize is some people don't actually know what they want from GDC. Even me, I'm not sure what I want from GDC, and people that are 10, 15 years experience are not sure what they want from it either. And just having that collection of people be there in order to try to, illuminate things and unearth information that could be useful, is sometimes a good thing. For me this year, I decided to focus on the roundtables, and I was looking at my GDC emails, the ones that tell me, oh, you went to such and such session, please remember to review it. The vast majority of stuff that I attended were the roundtables. which are things that are not recorded, and by virtue of that, are considered to be safe spaces for all sorts of conversation to come up. So no questions that are too stupid. People are free and encouraged to say whatever it is that they think is important. And when I go to these things, sometimes I'll think, oh yeah, there's a specific thing that I am hoping to learn, and maybe that will come up. And other times I'm thinking, oh, okay, I'm in that space, and I'm interested in what the cool information is that's out there that's waiting to be disseminated among everyone that's there. And when it's the latter, I felt that I actually got a lot. You know, whether it be a programming roundtable or a design roundtable or a business roundtable, I was just sort of there absorbing and learning and then following up in the hour or so after the roundtable. And that was really, really great. I loved that structure. This was the first time I really focused on that as opposed to hitting lecture after lecture. And I feel like all the people that I came across, whether they be younger or more veteran, you know, like me, it's, you know, I'm in my 40s now. It seemed like they got a whole lot out of it. And maybe this is just, I don't know, maybe a little wishful thinking, but these are perhaps the types of things that I'm most excited by. And those are really exciting. But if they are that exciting, why is GDC so focused on all these big lectures with the AAA speakers and the guys that are these luminaries from the 90s, 2000s, and today? I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out the answer for myself, much less for all the other people that are out there.
I think it's a side effect of GDC trying to address a wide number of different interests. And like you say, some people are going to be there for the workshops and the presentations and the lectures, and others are going to be there more for this social element and the networking element. So it sounds like they're taking a wide net. Is that the expression? They're covering a lot of ground in what they offer. As a postscript to your advocacy of the roundtables, I want to have a minor vent that I didn't appreciate how GDC scheduled several very interesting looking audio roundtables at the exact same time on the same day, thus forcing us to choose between one of several very relevant audio relevant roundtables, and with the understanding that there's no opportunity to catch the ones you missed because they're not recorded.
I hated that. There was definitely a time, I think you might know it, that where there were three audio roundtables that were super interesting to me. One was a design, a sound design hand in hand with game design roundtable. One of them was a programming roundtable, and one of them was an audio director roundtable. And I thought, oh yes, all of those are in my wheelhouse. And they were all at the exact same time. So I did what I decided to do was I decided to step out after 20 minutes with each of those in order to get as much as I can out of that, and at least try to figure out, okay, which room do I want to hang out outside after this time block and see what happens from there. Yeah, that programming can be really, really obnoxious.
It is a problem, yeah. But
hey, Alex, is there any particular type of programming or event that would convince you to go to something like GDC to spend that pretty considerable expense and just do it? Or is it something more than that?
That's a tough question. And I think for me, my needs, again, the what I hope to get out of GDC shifts depending on what my company's doing and where I am at generally in my career and what I'm doing and what I'm looking for. I don't really know. I would say I'm very interested in the, as regular listeners will know, I'm very interested in the more philosophical, the aesthetic and the artistic aspects of game audio. So less discussions about here's how we did this in WISE, or this is how why FMOD is better, or that kind of stuff, and more about, you know, these were the aesthetic objectives that we were given and this is how we achieved them. Those kinds of talks in terms of game audio are very fascinating. I think the business aspect, I mean, because I run a business, the business aspect and comment and speculation and analysis and reporting from the game industry in general on the business side is always very interesting. And then whether how relevant or useful that is will depend on where my company is at and where the industry is at that particular time. So it's a little difficult to say. I think that for myself personally, the most enjoyment that I've had out of GDC has always been consistently the times when I've gone to San Francisco but not bought a ticket to go into GDC. So the anti-GDC GDC, if you like, where you just go there and you hang out and you meet up with friends and then they'll introduce you to other friends and you go to restaurants and you go to parties and you have a nice time and you chat and you meet fun people. Those experiences of GDC have always been the most fun, and then the ones that I always look back with very fond memories of, as opposed to, oh yeah, remember in 2011 when I was at GDC and I went to that talk by this person and it was so fascinating, I'll never forget that. Less that way for me personally, but as Mike said, right, everybody is different and everybody has a different actually, I don't think Mike actually said that, but what I took from what he said was there are different objectives for why you would want to be there, and then that should then dictate how valuable or not it is actually to go. So it's a tough one.
That's what I was thinking, by the way, so yeah, good job.
That's right, thanks.
Yeah,
I knew that. Yeah, well, shall we move on from the topic of GDC to something new and special, Vince? What do you think?
Ooh, something new and special. Yeah, let's go ahead and do that.
So listeners might recall that several episodes ago, we put out a call that if you were curious and interested to have your music or your work played here on the show, broadcast for everybody to hear, and then some, I don't know, comments, feedback, or general impressions, or praise, or all of the above from the three of us, then feel free to send your links to your work through to us, and we would give it a listen and air it here on the show. And we're going to be doing the very first installment of this today, right here, right now. We haven't quite decided on the name for this segment yet, but the current front runner is The Hot Take, which I think is pretty good.
Or the Game Audio Hour Hot Take.
The Game Audio Hot Take. I think Vince also had the suggestion in the green room there before we started recording of it was the Game Audio Hour Forced Feedback, which is a kind of a sort of a Freudian slip in a way.
Yes.
No.
A little bit. I'm not sure how serious of a suggestion that is from me.
Yeah. Anyway, the inaugural first installment here of The Hot Take is going to feature the work of a regular listener, Lucas Ray Ramos from Portugal, who submitted work to us several weeks ago now. So many apologies, Lucas, for taking so long to get around to airing your work on the show here. Before we have a listen to Lucas's work, I'm just going to read a little bit of information that Lucas has requested that we just explain as to set some context for what we're going to be hearing. So Lucas has been collaborating with a company called Corvus Belli, and Corvus Belli specializes actually in tabletop war games, and their flagship product being a tabletop war game called Infinity, which is quite popular in Spain and the United States. And this game, which Lucas has scored, is the very first game that they've released that has a hybrid approach. And by hybrid, firstly, the title of the game is called Warcrow Adventures, and it is a medieval fantasy game. And in Lucas's words here, it's hybrid in the sense that it's mostly a tabletop campaign game, but it features a mandatory app that carries the log of the campaign for which Lucas has composed the music. Lucas goes on to say, I truly hope that this is the first step in my career as a music composer, and so I'd like to have your feedback. I have teased some tracks publicly before the game launch, and what we're going to be listening to today is an excerpt from the main track for the game, which has been made for the trailer. So let's have a listen now just to a little excerpt of Lucas's work.
Thank you, Lucas, for that music. That was really quite nice. There is some very nice music going on here. We've on the podcast, you've only heard a little bit of the main theme, but besides the main theme, there's also the variations or the theme and variations for this village that he's also submitted for us to listen to. And both of them were actually really good. There are definitely a couple places where I think, oh, I just gotten taken out of the music for a bit. And I'm actually kind of wondering if you guys, Mike or Alex, might have gotten a similar feeling that happened there. Because, when it comes to music production, especially in this world that we live in where everyone's got the latest plugins and the latest soft synths, you can definitely go on and on about, such and such hundreds of gigabyte string library, that's the latest thing. And that's what everyone uses, right? It is pretty apparent that this is not that. But actually, I think there are many places where I think, yes, this string library that is not the most awesome thing in the world in terms of the quality of its sound is actually very good. It sits very nicely. There are some really interesting figures, some really interesting writing that's happening throughout this. And I think, oh, this is really nice.
What I think, Vince, might be the most fruitful way to approach this, and to our listeners, forgive us because this is the first time we've ever done this, and we're feeling our way through this new segment. Is maybe to think of two passes and do an aesthetics pass and then a production pass. Because I think as we continue to evaluate submissions like this, the production comments we give are probably going to start echoing common recurring principles and themes. There's always going to be an opportunity to accelerate to a better string library, et cetera, et cetera. So it's also, I think, useful to comment on the art part of the music and then maybe focus secondarily on the production part. Because if we have something, as is the case here, where there's a lot of aesthetic merit, but I think we have some critique on the production, we don't want the good comments, we don't want the praise that we have to get too swallowed up by the production commentary. So that was a really long-winded prelude, but if you don't mind,
less long-winded than what I just said. So,
yeah, as listeners, again, we're working our way through this. So this is these are early days in this feature. But let me offer first a kind of a broad aesthetic comment. That's such a hard word to pronounce. And then maybe Vince and Alex, you can do the same. And then we can do a second round and we can talk about what we think about the production and then maybe give some suggestions there. How does that sound?
Sounds good.
Okay, let's do it.
Cool. So artistically, I'm going to use that word instead. Artistically, I think that there's a lot of there's a lot that's right here. There's a lot that I really connected to. I think that the basic musical framework, you know, the modal harmonic vocabulary, the theme itself, the instrumental palette, you know, the mixture between soloists and the more ensemble string sound, all fit very well for this genre. And for those of you out there who have not yet looked at the video, we are looking at a series of slides and some animations that are introducing this tabletop RPG, which to my eye looks like squarely in the middle of the fantasy tradition. So I feel like the vibe is right. The mood is right. I think there's a lot of good instincts in the orchestration, how we start from a small, focused, ambient sound, and as the piece develops, it picks up energy, and the drums come in, and we move from soloists to a more larger-scale sound. The variety of instrumentation, I think, brings a lot of interest to the ear. You know, we're not just listening to a string and brass soup. We're really moving from voice to voice. And I think all of this works in the piece's favor. Artistically, the comments I would make on the constructive criticism side, I felt like the piece was a bit subdued, where it could have been more intense. And this is particularly the case towards the end of the video, where the editorial rhythm of the video is increasing and there's this sense of mounting intensity and the cuts are more frequent and there's more of a dynamic sense of a busy, you know, kind of a trailer vibe where we're building up to a sense of climax and arrival. And I don't feel like the energy of the piece always followed the energy of the visuals. Now, this is a kind of critique that applies when we have a cut scene, you know, or a static linear media kind of scoring situation where the music is really meant to complement a very specific visual sequence. So I wanted it to get, in simpler terms, I wanted it to get bigger and grander towards the end and perhaps to try to match some of the cuts that I think flew by, some of the significant characters who I think are being presented to us as kind of the main movers and shakers of this game. I think those are my thoughts artistically. Vince, how do you weigh in that area?
I think that you're right on there, and that's also really helped me solidify some of that rambling that I was trying to convey earlier, because there is something going on when it comes to that divide between the artistic choices and the production, where I feel like for the main theme, the beginning musical material really is very much about the production. The swells, the combination of the synth as well as the synth orchestra. And there's so much production-y stuff that's happening in terms of the sound and its impact at the very beginning. And then later on, it becomes a little more interesting musically, but it also doesn't grow from there because of actually that production element that I know you're not really touching on that right now, but I can't quite get that out of my head because I think that connects to what you are feeling there about the lack of energy, the lack of the music matching the growth and the more exciting visuals that are happening there in that trailer. So that's where it is for me in my mind. What about you, Alex?
Wow, that is fantastic feedback. Note to self, don't ever submit an orchestral thing to the hot take. No, that's really, really good feedback. And obviously, with both of your respective pedigrees in music like this, for context like this, that's fantastic feedback. Very, very useful and wonderfully delivered. Lucas, I would say, as a little bit of context, this definitely is not my wheelhouse. I'm pretty much squarely electronica and electronica-based genres, all the time. And so this style of music, if somebody had asked me to score a soundtrack for a fantasy tabletop RPG companion app, I would have done my usual thing and just called up Mike. help me, Mike. Yeah, but No, I guess the feedback that I had, and again, please bear in mind that this comes from somebody who has pretty much no experience with this style of music, with this style of production. I thought it was excellent. I thought that on the positive side, I felt that your instrumentation choices were quite fascinating and quite bold. You know, some of the instruments that you choose and the textures that you choose there to have in to match with the visual aesthetics of the game, to me just felt fascinating. Like, wow, that's a curious choice. I never would have expected that kind of instrument to be playing here. Very bold and brave, I felt, and that was fantastic. Mike also commented on that as well, the instrumentation being quite diverse and quite interesting. The one area where I guess I felt a little bit, it wasn't a matter of energy, but in the second half, which you might need to, if you watch we'll link to this in the show notes for today's episode, so you can go and watch the entire trailer. In the latter half of the trailer, the percussion comes in, and from that point onward, for me, it wasn't a lack of energy. It was more, I suppose aesthetically, I felt like, oh, okay, here we are. Now we're back in standard, regular fantasy game orchestral territory. You know, you've got the kind of drums in the background and the strings, this kind of thing, right? It's extremely fitting, extremely appropriate. And somehow I felt a little bit disappointed there, because in the first half, you were really surprising me and entertaining me with some very fascinating, interesting instrumental choices, which somehow I thought, after listening to this, potentially those interesting instrumentation choices, that is a better representation of your individual style and your individual character that you bring to your music than the second half, which becomes much more, you know, shall we say, it feeds into the expectation that, okay, this is a fantasy game and I'm watching a trailer for a fantasy game. So you have all the key elements that one would expect. So the surprise element sort of falls out in the second half for me. So I suppose my very amateur advice for this genre would be, I would love to hear you embrace much more of what identifies you, what is individual about you, and what makes you unique. And the one aspect for me when I listened to this that I was not expecting and then gave me that very entertaining surprise was in the first half, where it was curious instrumentation choices and just a general feeling of diversity of timbre, I suppose, in the first half. That was really gripping for me. And so I'd love to see you embrace that more and to really push that aspect forward, because as I've said many, many, many times on the show, my personal belief is that in this veritable ocean of incredibly talented, wonderful game audio peers that we are surrounded by, everybody is doing an amazing job these days, and that is outstanding. That is wonderful. In order to stand out, really, the only way to do that is just to do the only thing that nobody else can do, and that is to be, you know, 110% you, to find what identifies your individual style and really grip that and push that forward as blatantly as you can. And that's kind of what I would like to hear in this case. And the first half did that, the second half didn't. So that would be my feedback.
Alex, I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to the theme and variations of the second of the two pieces that were submitted to us, but I think you will be pleased with the kind of uniqueness and expression of musical personality in some of the instrumental choices for that piece as well.
Yeah, I did listen to that as well. And that's why I kind of suspected that in Lucas's case, this wonderful kind of entertaining curiosity towards instrumentation, that potentially could be something that identifies Lucas's individual style. And that was because of, you know, evidently all of the interesting instrumentation choices in that second excerpt that he sent us. So on the production side, this is one area where I'm just going to have to step back and you know, be like Michael Jackson in that Thriller meme gif where he's chewing the popcorn watching the movie. Because this is one area where I have precisely zero experience or expertise. But what kind of feedback can you both offer on the production side, Mike?
Well, one thing that struck me, no pun intended, was that when the drums and percussive effects did arrive, they felt a little anemic. With this kind of piece, with this kind of trailer piece, we need a bit of forcefulness when we hear drums. And just from the standpoint of mixing and perhaps instrument choice and maybe compression, they felt muted. They felt diminished. And I don't know if they were overcompressed, so we were losing the transients. It may be that there needed to be more subtractive EQ applied to the drums so that they could be brought forward in the mix without blotting out the sun and, you know, hogging the entire spectrum. But I think, much as I think Vince augured, I think the lack of oomph in that second part, and the part that we would expect to be climactic, the lack of energy there, I think, owes in part to the choice of instrumentation. And the drum is perhaps foremost among the instruments that are active at that point in the music. Vince, what do you think on that front?
Yeah, I felt similarly. I'm not sure about the drums itself, but definitely the relationship between the drums and the strings, which are together providing that rhythmic backbone for the piece. It seemed like they really wanted to do something, and I couldn't really find that drive in either the strings or the drums. And it was a little bit frustrating for me, because I thought that would be such a really nice contrast to feel that, even as you had all this really nice stuff that's happening in the winds. And first of all, before I go any further, kudos for all the wind stuff, all the stuff in the high winds and the ethnic winds that you used. I feel like that's something that many composers often omit or are scared to use. And I'm glad that you actually use it in many places in the main theme, as well as in the village music. So that's great. But I really wanted some more drive happening there. I really wanted that rhythmic backbone to be really strong and reinforced. And it could be the drum choice. It could be the drum processing. Maybe I do wonder if it was just a matter of trying to figure out how to fit them in with each other without drowning the other one out or being too present. But in the end, it feels kind of muted, which was a little bit disappointing.
That's interesting. I kind of took it the other way. I thought that was an intentional aesthetic choice, because if you look at the visuals in the trailer at that point, because the trailer is kind of like an animated slideshow, it didn't feel like the second half of the trailer where the momentum picks up with the rhythm. It didn't feel like it demanded such a strong sense of overpowering forward movement and momentum and energy from the music. And so I sort of thought, actually, oh, that's pretty nice. You know, normally this kind of fantasy music trailer, you'd expect like huge, big Japanese taiko drum, like that. And here, no, it was more subdued and more subtle and more kind of intentionally placed in the background, just to give us a slight sense of momentum, but not so much that it would seem out of place on what is effectively an animated slideshow. If we had like full, you know, swooping visuals and 3D cinematics and dragons coming out, breathing fire over masses of minions of soldiers or whatever, or stuff like that, yeah, maybe in that case you'd want that. But in this case, to me, it felt like actually an intentional choice. But yeah, I mean, I think the point that you're both making there, that otherwise, in this case, because the dramatic tension is increasing, if we're going to do that, then let's just take it all the way.
I definitely get that. And I think I really like what's going on in other parts of the orchestration. Like, I like the high strings that he does. I like the high winds. But it seems, even ignoring what's actually going on with the trailer and the visuals, I felt like they're still missing stuff in the low strings and the percussion in order to balance out all that interesting activity that's happening there. So I don't think it's purely motivated by what's going on the visuals. I think it's also that balance of everything that's going on in the music too.
Indeed. Well,
I think we're in a circle of agreement with each other at this point. there's definitely, I mean, I'm inclined to think, Alex, if I were to run with your idea and say the somewhat subdued percussion was a choice, you know, a feature rather than a bug, I think that probably the most effective way to approach that is through either instrumental selection, where you've just got something that does not have a pronounced high end, you know, a big drum without a big clack kind of sound to it, but then hit that thing for all it's worth. So we do feel like there's some energy. It's just not a drum that has that typical transient heavy sound. Or alternatively, start with something that does have a lot of high-end transients and then process it with EQ to give it a kind of cool, effecty, low, thumpy quality rather than a broadband, you know, throwing an anvil into a Tyco kind of sound that we associate with most trailers. What I feel like we're hearing here is a Tyco in the next room. You know, the mutedness sounded like it was too far away and it wasn't mic'd closely enough. So that's why, to me, it didn't quite feel like an artistic choice. There's definitely plenty of room for subjective disagreement. But I feel like in order for us to be useful, we want to give the kind of feedback that I think would help the music grow and resonate artistically and be commercial. So those are my thoughts for you know, better or for worse.
Fantastic. Well, just to wrap this up, the game, the title of the game is The Warcrow Adventures from Corvus Belli. And you can go to warcrow.com to get more information about the game. And today we have heard the fabulous music by Lucas Rey Ramos from Portugal. And Lucas's website, if you're interested in hearing more of his work, and I highly encourage you to do so, because Lucas has his own website, Lucas Rey Ramos. That's Lucas, LucasReiRamos.com. So definitely go along to Lucas's website and have a good listen and support. Thank you very much, Lucas, for giving us this opportunity to pass comment on your wonderful work. And at the end of the show, Vince also is going to just cover the way to submit your work if you would like to participate in this, the Game Audio Hour Hot Take, currently named Hot Take. Maybe we'll think of something better by next episode. Who knows?
What do you mean better?
I don't know.
I mean, the thing is, it's not bad, but I don't think it has quite the snappiness and power of, say, Conspicuous Consumption.
Yeah, hold on, Vince. Before you do that, the thing is that if we called it force feedback, then you know what's going to happen. It's going to be, well, that was forced feedback, and now...
No. Oh, no.
Not a great connotation, no.
That's right. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Vince. Yes, Conspicuous Consumption. Please go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, Conspicuous Consumption. What else is there to say except this is the part of the show where we talk about things that we've been listening to, watching, playing. You know, even though there's been some events that have taken me out of home for a while, there's definitely been some things that are fun and cool, right? Mike, have you been checking out anything lately? Anything cool that you've been listening to or playing?
Yeah, I'm going to use my Conspicuous Consumption report to give a kind of shout out to one of the things at GDC that I really enjoyed, which was a orchestral concert of game music at GDC called, I think it was called the Developers Concert, that was conducted and I think presided over primarily by Austin Wintory. And just because of the timing of the conference for me, this was the very first thing I attended. And it was really a blast. I got to hear a well-curated selection of game music themes that leaned heavily towards recency. So you were hearing a lot of things that came out in the last few years. And sometimes I think with orchestral arrangements or reorchestrations that Austin had very expertly done. And it was just such a fun way to, first of all, experience game music in a organic, fleshed out form that we don't always get in the, you know, the source medium. But it was also like a greatest hits of what's been happening lately. And it was just so much fun. And I loved a lot of what I heard. So that was a really good experience. Albeit not one that I can advocate that other people try to attend, because I think that was a one and done kind of event. But Vince, did you get a chance to see that concert?
I did, and I definitely enjoyed it. I really liked it. I was actually wondering how it would go, because who knows, you know, what exactly the program would be. Usually you go to a concert and you know what is on the program. But this time around, I thought, oh, let's see what's up. And, you know, having that duo there of Austin as well as one of his partners in crime, Troy Baker, just talking back and forth about, you know, their feelings about game music that they have listened to prior or have not, as was sometimes the case with Troy, was actually really fun. And yeah, there were some really cool things that were on the program. And I'm really happy that I was actually able to check it out, because there was a part of me that thought, oh, you know, I've heard a lot of game music. I'm at GDC. Do I need to do this again? I don't know. But yes, it was actually great. I also thought it was a really nice concert from the orchestra that they put together, which was a combination of some video game session musicians that have been around the industry for a while, as well as some students from the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. And they really did a bang up job. I would say there was only one piece of music where I thought, oh yeah, you could tell that they're struggling to keep up. There was one, they were doing some music from Hogwarts, actually, the Hogwarts Legacy game. And that was a particularly fast action cue that they were doing. And you could kind of hear for a moment that, oh yeah, they're struggling to keep up with each other. But besides that, I thought that ensemble did a really bang up job. So they sounded very, very good. Also, I was surprised by that space. You know, it's not a concert venue. This is a big expo hall with the line array speakers. And I've never heard proper acoustic music being played in that space. And it turned out to be a really great space for it. I thought it sounded really nice.
Yeah, agreed on all fronts.
I know we're talking about this as a GDC thing, but for those who weren't there or for those who want to relive it, GDC actually did put the concert up on their YouTube. So you could just go to YouTube and search for 2024 GDC Developers Concert, and it will come up right away. Just check it out. It's really nice.
And what have you been conspicuously consuming other than that, Vince?
Let's see. Am I going to do the silly thing? Yeah, I'm going to do the silly thing. So, I recently got a movie that just recently came out in 4K on Blu-ray. This is an older movie and not exactly one that we think of when we think, oh, classic great movies from great directors. I would say, yes, James Cameron is a very, very good, if not great, director. But True Lies is perhaps a little bit more slight in terms of its impact on cinema. But it is also one of my favorite movies. I like to say that it is one of the top 10 best movies of all time, simply by virtue of being a top 10 comedy and a top 10 action flick. But even more importantly, it actually has one of my favorite soundtracks of all time.
All right.
And it is done by Well, it's composed by Brad Fiedel, who is now mostly in the world of musical theater, if not just totally retired at this point, actually. It's been a long time since he's done anything for film, despite being a pretty big film composer in the 80s and 90s. But besides that, it was also orchestrated by one of my favorite composers in the film world, Shirley Walker.
Oh, nice.
And so I love listening to her treatment of the orchestra as much as just the general soundtrack. Like, Shirley Walker really knows how to work an orchestra. She was the orchestrator and the conductor on the score, and her fingerprints are all over the sound of this film. So I'm just such a fan of her work. She's just one of those voices in the music world, in the Hollywood, that unfortunately few have been able to really experience and appreciate. And unfortunately also, she left us too soon. So I just wanted to do a big shout out there for this film, which most people don't think of as a Shirley Walker soundtrack, because Brad is the composer on that, but her sound and her orchestration really makes that soundtrack sing.
Fantastic. It's been a long time since I've seen True Lies. I should go back and give it another watch.
Yeah. Well, while you haven't been watching that, what have you been checking out, Alex?
Well, this is going to be a little bit of a different conspicuous consumption for me, because let's call it a planned conspicuous consumption as opposed to something that I've been doing. Last year, I think it was, on a recommendation from my brother, I bought both of the Mirror's Edge games. DICE, and I played Mirror's Edge. It didn't quite grip me, and I played Mirror's Edge Catalyst, which is the second, and that one was much more entertaining. But at the time, I was going through a very bad case of Cyberpunk 2077 relapse, so it was kind of hard to play anything else at that point. I've recently come to become an acquaintance with one of the original sound designers on both Mirror's Edge and Mirror's Edge Catalyst, a colleague here in Sweden by the name of Magnus Walterstad, who would actually be somebody who'd be fantastic to have come and be a guest on the show. Magnus is a fantastic guy, and we've become quite good friends through collaboration on a project that we're doing at the moment. And he had mentioned that he had done sound for both of those games, and because he originally worked for DICE for, I don't know, something like 17 years or something like that. He's the real deal. Anyway, last night I reinstalled, I asked him which does he think is better out of Mirror's Edge and Mirror's Edge Catalyst, and he said 100% the first one, Mirror's Edge. And so I'm going to conspicuously consume that immediately after this show. So I don't know if that counts, if I can do like a planned conspicuous consumption, but there you go.
I think that works. It's very conspicuous. So indeed. Yeah, I think that counts.
Planned future cool. consumption, yeah.
That's right, yeah. But it'd be wonderful to, if we can get Magnus on the show. I believe it should be possible, because he doesn't live in Stockholm, but he does live in Sweden. So time zone wise, it's not going to be an issue.
Yeah. That sounds great. I know some longtime listeners have mentioned that they're really happy with the fact that we've been pushing these guests lately. And we actually do have some other guests that are coming up in the near future for the Game Audio. This is all exciting times, and we're really happy to see this happen for our future episodes. But before we can get to that, we have to put the capstone on this one, because this was episode 258 of the Game Audio Hour. If you liked what you heard, feel free to support us by subscribing to us at your podcast purveyor of choice and leaving us a review to keep us in the forefront of the algorithm. You can also follow us on X at Game Audio Hour, where we post notices about episodes as they drop, as well as try to support some other fun and positive voices out there in the social media landscape. We also have been showcasing some different music lately on the Game Audio Hour, as you just heard. If you are so inclined, you can propose some of your own music to be disseminated and discussed on the Game Audio Hour. Just reach out to us on X or at our email, info@gameaudiohour.com. And if you're out on the World Wide Web and you're never quite sure about where to go, just know you can always reach us at gameaudiohour.com. Go ahead and do that while I try to think of something better than the hot take. Is that really what we're going to do?
Come on,
Vince.
Is
it really going to be the hot take?
Come on, Vince.
Recognize genius.
That's right.
Maybe. I don't know. Actually, I trust you, Mike. I think you did a really bang-up job there, salvaging my rambling to start up the hot take. Oh, wait. Now I'm calling it the hot take.
Okay. See, it's already ossified in our minds.
That's right.
Okay.